Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Washington State University.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Oregon and Stanford.
Nope.
Touchdown, Washington.
Yep.
Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.
Welcome back to the Dog Pod, your original podcast covering the 11-0 Pac-12 leading, fourth ranked in the AP, and soon to be fourth in the CFP if they're not cowards. Ticket punched to the Pac-12 championship. Just one game left to be the first ever team to run the Pac-12 table. Your Washington Huskies tackle football team. I'm with Law Dog. I'm with Mitch. Mitch are back from, he was our on-field correspondent back from Corvallis. The Dogs win. The Dogs cover 22-20 in the monsoon of the state of Oregon. We're going to dissect that game, and we're going to prep for the 115th Apple Cup. Gentlemen, buckle up. You guys ready to go?
Let's do it.
Okay. All right. Us versus us. The Dogs opened as favorites and quickly went to the Beavs -2.5 and dropped down to Beavs, I think, -1 by kickoff. None of that would matter. Let's get into this game recap and then, Mitch, the trip report. Let's hear. How'd it go down, Law Dog?
Well, the rain was falling down. I can't wait to hear from Mitch, but UW starts with the ball, marches 63 yards and 10 plays to get this one started. This was Penix to Rome for the first time, touchdown, 7-0 Huskies. The Beavers come back, and even though it looked like it might have gotten into a shootout at this point, right? They go 75 yards and 10 plays, tie the game at 7. But the Huskies go 3-and-out in their next possession. They get a stop on the Beavers, too. But on fourth down, the long snapper sails one. And the ball trickles all the way down to the goal line where the punter kicks it out of the back of the end zone to make it 9-7 Washington. Got to admit, that's a good play, even though he did get a penalty for that.
I got a nice comment right from that, like right when that happened. You forget how this, my 10-year-old was like, you can do that?
Yeah, teams trade a couple of punts. We enter the second quarter. Then Dylan Johnson breaks away 43 yards right down the gut. And Keaton Oladapo smacking the ball loose. Oregon State gets the first big break of the game on their own 5-yard line, 11 minutes left in the half. But the Huskies fortuitously get it right back. This time it was Carson Bruner, the beast, punching it out of Anthony Gould's hands to put the Huskies back in business on the Beaver 19-yard line. This time it's Penix who gets his number called, runs it in for the touchdown to make it 16-7. Beavers move it right back now into Husky territory, but the defense, you got to give it to them, man. They stepped up in this game. They're holding the Beavers to a field goal with 5 minutes left in the half, and that enables the Huskies to take advantage. This time is a beautiful 32-yard touchdown to Rome. Was it a push-off? And the Huskies missed the two-pointer, 22-10 at half. After the break, Jabbar Muhammad gets into the action here, picks off Uiagalelei at the Beaver 22, but Grady Gross, been clutch all season. He misses a field goal. It just felt like, man, if we could have just gotten that field goal right there, it might have made our...
He made the first one, though, right?
He makes it after, yeah, and then they get the false start called, and then he comes back, and he misses the second one. Yeah. Huskies clinging there to a 22-10 lead. Still felt comfortable, but Oregon State here, I don't really... I mean, I get what they were doing, Martinez, but they really ate a lot of clock here, down 2 scores. I thought that was kind of foolish. They go 78 yards on 16 plays. They do get the touchdown, but pull 10 minutes off the clock to make it 22-17. This time it was Damian Martinez, who was just all over the field against the Huskies. And they just did not show up offensively in the second half, guys. I mean, they only got a few opportunities, but they just didn't put the game away when they had a chance. So they go 3-and-out again. This time they punt it back to Oregon State. And with about 11 minutes left in the game, Uiagalelei just cannot connect with his receivers. Beavers have to settle for another field goal. So it's still 22-20. Huskies punt it back again, and I was starting to get real nervous at this point. Martinez moving it down the field. But Oregon State, again, eating so much clock. And Martinez gets stuffed at the Beaver 41-yard line on first down. Uiagalelei goes incomplete, check down, and incomplete on fourth to turn it over to the Huskies with just 2 minutes left. The Beavers burn their final two timeouts, and with 1:58 left, Huskies are looking at a critical 3rd-and-3 from the Beaver 40-yard line. I thought maybe they might go two-play territory here. I thought they'd want to at least run it and get the clock moving. But Ryan Grubb took out his big balls and just goes back shoulder fade to Rome on first down for the first down, and the Huskies clinch their 18th win in a row, guys. Woo! Huskies 22, Beavers 20, and the Pack 2 is one down, one to go.
Upset alert all week. Oregon State was the favorite, oh, yeah. Right? This was it. Yep. The week that they go down, finally.
It was a bad sign.
Doesn't happen.
It was Mitch a bad talked, sign when the line moved for them. It was like, oh, that's not what you needed.
Mitch, talk to us about your trip down there to Corvallis. And what'd you see in this, making the correspondence work, doing the hard work?
Well, first off, I had flashbacks because the last time I was down there was actually the Point game, guys, where we blew out Oregon. And then that night, we've got a former call-in host, Gumby Bear, Cal played mm-hmm. in Corvallis. So we drove up the freeway and hit the Cal-Oregon State game. That was the last time I had gone down there. And it was great. Everybody loved us. We were like rock stars several times. Got our tabs picked up by several Beavers in some of the bar night, which was great fun. Honestly, you guys, it was a great trip. Like, first off, the Beaver fans, we had a great time. Yes. Was there some salt? Absolutely. But when you got past it right away, very, very gracious host down there. We bonded very quickly over our hatred of the Ducks. That was the go-to after any awkwardness of 2 minutes of conversation, was just how much we both hated the Ducks. And there was usually a high five and a cold beverage passed at that point in time. The weather was no joke. Like, honestly, you know, sometimes when you're watching games, you know, it's kind of hard to tell when it's raining. And I heard even on the broadcast, you could tell, you guys, it was raining sheets. It was coming down. And they had just remodeled Reser, right? In the concourse, there were like little lakes in the concourse. Now, going into the game, took some pictures of some Beaver families. They have all these cool things. We got a picture next to Bucky the Beaver. It was pretty fun. I have one complaint about the remodel. On the main concourse in the stadium, there is a bathroom that has four urinals and two stalls, and it's a one-way in bathroom where you have to turn around and come out on the same entrance. Guys, to use the facilities, it was a 30-minute wait during game action. Like, there was a lot of griping. It was actually pretty bad, you guys. Like, it was terrible.
I actually saw that on Twitter. Somebody else was like, this is literally inexcusable.
There was a comment on that. It was like, you could White River raft on that stream. Anyways, we'll move along. The game action was really, really fun. Honestly, the fan, like, again, we were sitting next to some great fans behind us, Beaver fans from Salem, and they had snuck in their own moonshine into the game.
Oh, God.
So in the second half, things were starting to get a little bit loose. They were classy enough to offer us some. We took a little bit, and let's say it was legitimate. It was legitimate Oregon moonshine.
Lived in Salem for a bit, Mitch, and that's just how they are. That's just what they do.
That's just how it goes.
Yeah.
And if not, you put in a spray bottle and clean your windows. There's lots of uses for it. It's good.
It's totally fine. Yeah, absolutely. Great game. I'll tell you, seeing Rome make those catches live was absolutely, like, I mean, it was awesome. It just silenced the crowd. You know, the whole chainsaw thing, this one last comment here, you know, it gets a lot of press. You didn't really hear it that much when you're in the game action and stuff like that.
Third down.
But I'll tell you. Yeah, it wasn't that prominent. I don't know if the rain was drowning everything out or not, but, like, I'm telling you guys, the Dogs just keep finding different ways to win. Man, I love seeing Carson Broomer ball out like that. Like, he was just fantastic. It was all over the field. Martinez is a beast. I think he's going to give the Ducks all they can handle. I think the Ducks still win that game because it's down in Eugene. But this is a good team, you guys. It was a good team, and it was awesome to see us take their punches and then just give it right back.
You know, with Rome's performance, just to go off on this a little bit, I mean, not only this is your Biletnikoff right there, is this a point where you go back to some of the other times when you've had multiple invitees to the Heisman ceremony from the same team, a la Monty Ball, Russ Wilson, Graham Harrell, Mike Crabtree, Adrian Peterson, Jason White, Leinart, Reggie Bush. And I don't know if you get it. Like, are you a top 10, you know, or is it, you know, one of those scenarios where they don't get the invite, but he's there. I mean, what he's doing is incredible.
There's enough good candidates this year that I think that's unlikely, but the Blitnikoff is definitely within his sights. He was just named a semifinalist for that today. And Mitch, what you might not have seen from your seats is he was working the crowd after those touchdowns, after those big catches. He was getting up in their face, you know.
Manziel fingers.
He was letting them know who had just done the damage.
We saw it. It was awesome. It was fantastic.
Thing of beauty. It's a thing of beauty.
Yes.
Oh, that's great. That is
the
just
game ball, man. He gets the game ball. He balled out.
Just incredible. This was one that I think a lot of people penciled in the beginning of the year when you thought, like, this is your one loss if this is a team that can't run the table because no one can run the table in the Pac-12. And a lot of people said, this one's it. Like, this is it. Oregon State's going to be a great team. And this is where they drop one, particularly. And I'll say I was really confident all week until I started seeing the weather. And when I think these sideways, you know, cold rain, advantage running team, advantage home team, right? And that's where things started getting a little worrying. And then when the injuries started piling up at the beginning of the game, and we'll get into this, you started hearing about, did anyone know no Alfonso Tupatala? Did we know no Vincent Nunley? Did we know no Cam Fab? And then you had a few in-game injuries as well, where I started getting a little worried. But this is a team that finds ways to win, and just absolutely incredible. Let's get into this a little bit, and I'll just talk a little bit about the defense and talk to me about the O. But you know, some of the things I thought were incredible. Obviously, Carson Bruner. I mean, this is your defensive player of the game. And I got a text after the game from from Lofa, you know, one of our former guests on the pod, is saying, how do they keep this guy off the field now? Like, how this guy's incredible. How do you keep off field? And I don't know how they do.
He was out there in critical phases of the game. He probably needed to be because of some of the injuries, you know, to your point. But I didn't feel like there was a drop off, guys. He played great.
No, I mean, but Loaf is right. He has not been playing starter minutes really all season, and he's been earning them. I mean, on special teams and everywhere else. Goforth, I did notice, came out of the game right at one point. And so I think he was picking up some extra snaps there. But I mean, you know, between Eddie O and Bruner, I feel like we have a really good, you know, two middle linebackers there. It's just a question of letting him get on the field.
Bruner was the best linebacker on the field on the day. And I thought Eddie had a fine game. And Eddie missed a few tackles as well. But what Bruner did, and even, like, I think that, remember that shoestring tackle that he had on Martinez on that third down that, you know, maybe, you know, isn't going to be as get the highlight reels that will, you know, his jarring the brothers, but it was freaking massive.
Huge. There were fans around us that were saying very bad words for 6-year-olds. Thank goodness there weren't any around, but when he made that tackle, people were pissed.
Oh, I mean, it just, and to not give up, just absolutely incredible. The reads that he's making, you know, and you think of the rest of the defense, I thought Trice, this is his most complete game of the year. And this is where you're like, wow, the absolute unstoppable wrecking machine. ZTF came off the field for quite some time. You know, and I don't know if that's an injury that's going to linger a little bit, but, and Voy played a little bit more, and there's a drop off between them. I definitely think there is, but my gosh, Trice, we've been talking about the secondary. I mean, this is the game film for Jabbar Muhammad that, you know, puts him in the NFL. My gosh, what a freaking game. And not only the picks, but what he does from a coverage perspective, particularly when he almost baits, I think QBs to target, maybe it's his size or he plays off, but coming up and making those plays that he does without getting penalties drawn on him, incredible. What worries me a little bit, Mikel Esteem, 63 snaps. That worries me, man. It worries me. This is something I thought, give him a little bit of time and come in and maybe next year. Mish, I think, had a tough game, missed a lot of tackles. Thaddeus Dixon, he had that one really totally unnecessary penalty in the end zone that ended up giving the Beavers on the ball on the one. And that scares me a little bit from a secondary perspective where you've got, you know, again, Vincent Nunley, non-injury, non-participant. I don't have any insider information on this, but I think this might be the end for him. I don't know how many times you can have, you know, whether we don't know whether it's a suspension or what this was, but how many times within a season you can have this happen. This might be the end. I don't know what the Cam Fab injury is. I didn't think we'd see Asa Turner back, at least until the bowl game, given his multiple injuries. But this from a secondary perspective, and let's get to be honest, with a air raid offense coming in that is going to get tested next week and the week after, no matter who we play. So that's the only thing that I think worries me a little bit. But with the offense sputtering, and we'll talk about that offense against Oregon State, the defense in the second half absolutely stepped up. and did what they did to credit them the win.
Yeah, offensively, I just feel like, you know, Penix was definitely having some drops, and it was affecting their passing game, you know, and the ball was super wet, and I'm sure it was not a great day to be throwing the ball around out there. But in the end, they made the plays they needed to make, and and they did it, and they got it done. Dylan Johnson, though, you know, you take out that 43-yarder with a fumble as well in there, and it's 15 carries for 46 yards, so maybe not as effective as he's been over the last couple weeks either. So definitely left a little meat on that bone offensively. It just was not, you know, this team's been elite offensively all season, and this was probably not their best performance. Again, it was probably their toughest matchup, and it was probably the worst conditions you could have asked for. We'll get to the Snow Bowls in a bit, but you know, all things considered, they did enough, and you know, I'm not worried long term necessarily.
You're spot on, Law Dog. And Grubb today in his pressers, and he was on KJR later in the afternoon with Softy, was very explicit about how he felt like that second half was the offense's worst half of football this entire year. And and the rain did let up in the second half. It wasn't, right. I mean, it was still wet out there, but it was not the deluge. And, you know, they keep those footballs pretty dry when they run them in. And they just weren't hitting. But again, like, guys, that was a intense environment. That was a raucous crowd. They had the whole lower bowl on the opposite side of us was all the students, and they all had orange hard hats on. And, you know, like I said, the chainsaw thing's a little overrated, but like they do that pull on the to get it started, the chainsaw. and it's a pretty fun environment. The fact that they can continue to step up. I know Oregon's blown everybody out and blah, 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 all of this and that, but this team just finds a way to step up with adversity. I love it.
You hit the nail on the head. I mean, how many of these games that we've talked about where they've had slip ups and you know, not playing their best football, Stanford, Arizona State, et cetera, and they find ways to win. I think the offense, we've been lucky. We talk about injuries on the defensive side and on the offensive side, how we haven't had any, and that, you know, that five combo of Brailsford, Buello, Fautana, Rosengarten, Nicolepo, everybody, all snaps. Doesn't sit a freaking snap. That worries me a little bit. I'd love to have them sit, but boy, they're healthy and they're playing great. And this is what, you know, I think, you know, that was you talking about them being the best offensive line they'll face. And maybe that's the case. The Dylan Johnson injury. He's in a boot. They say they might come back. It wasn't as bad as they thought, but that worries me because you saw the drop off between him and Tybo and Will and Sam. It's a drop off, right? Let's be honest about it. J-Mac, I was surprised at this of like, I think he had one, maybe two targets, 32 snaps. And, you know, I wonder about that. Look, obviously it was tough. You know, even JP, like JP had those drops, and you saw JP, like he came off to the sideline and took his gloves off. Like, let me just try bare hand.
Yeah.
I don't, this is, the gloves aren't working. Let me try something else. And that, like, that's a little bit concerning. We're not going to have that this week when we get into it on Saturday. It looks to be a completely dry, not a cloud in the sky, just a cold day. And then your next game's in a completely climate controlled dome. Right. So you made it through this. You survived.
Get us in a dome. Like, get us in a dome and we're going to light that up. I mean, the one thing I'll say, like, I think, you know, J-Mac's obviously rusty. That brace is pretty big on his knee.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I'm just kind of thinking, like, is he really going to be the J-Mac that we saw to begin the year? But if he could ease his way in, my hope is he gets the same number of snaps, at least, if not more, in this next game. And honestly, I'm not too worried about the number of targets or receptions. Like, get him out there, at least just make him get a little bit more confidence in where he's at.
You'd like to, because ideally you don't have Giles Jackson. I think they need to do everything to keep him off the field. He only had six snaps at Oregon State. Six snaps, and we used it. Right. So because he can't play him at Wazoo, or he's gone. Yeah. You know, he can't play.
He's redshirting.
We really need him next year.
So they declared it today.
It would have to be a complete and total, you know, breakdown of available players to have him, you know, come and play it in the Apple Cup. So it's going to be an interesting one, guys. Any other final Oregon State notes other than saying, hey, Mitch, great job with the correspondence work down there. I love seeing the pictures come in. And my goodness, what a gritty win, where I don't think any of your podcast hosts here, I don't think any of us lost any faith. We felt going into this thing, wrong team favored. It's probably going to be a little bit ugly, but we're going to get this win, and they did it. 11-0. Incredible.
They keep stepping up, guys, in these big games, in big moments. right? They keep stepping up.
Well, one more to get into. This is it for the first team. If they can get this win, not only winning the last Apple Cup within the Pac-8, Pac-12, Pac everything, the 115th Apple Cup this Saturday, 1 p.m. on Fox. It's Wazoo coming in. Law Dog, Professor Law Dog, why don't you take us in the time machine? Give us a little bit of this history before we get into the present day matchup on Saturday.
The Apple Cup. We've played it every year since 1944, guys, except for 2020, the COVID year. The Huskies also played Oregon State every year from 1945 on, except for 88 and 90. Played the Ducks every year, except for 2001. So in those 79 years, the Huskies have played Wazoo, Oregon, Oregon State in all but two seasons, Wazoo only missing the 1 year in 2020. So my point is these three longstanding rivalries, two of them we've just found out are going to continue. Oregon State, we've just closed the chapter. And next year will be the 116th meeting with Oregon and Wazoo, and that's going to be at Lumen Field. We'll get to that in a second.
Oh, boy.
First Apple Cup was played to a 5-5 tie in 1900. Huskies didn't take the series lead until 1903, BT. They had to wait for a while, but they've held it ever since. And the game was played in Seattle, actually, for 19 of the first 26 meetings.
Denny Field or like some park in Capitol Hill? Where were we here?
Denny Field, quite a few. Okay. Got into Husky Stadium. Huskies were 16-7 with three ties during that period. The Cougars' first win in Pullman did not come until 1929.
Oh, fears.
Saturday's game.
Wow.
It's going to be the 64th Apple Cup played in Seattle, which is 35 in Pullman. That's because in 1950, the teams began playing the Eastern Apple Cups in Spokane, and the Apple Cup wasn't played in Pullman between 1954 and 1982. Just like this Oregon rivalry that was played in Portland, right? Huskies went 13-3 against the Cougars in Spokane. But 1972, Washington State publicly committed funds. They didn't pay for Husky Stadium, boys, but they paid for Martin Stadium, named for former governor Clarence Martin, a Democrat from Cheney, Washington, served as the state's 11th governor from 1933 to 1941.
There you go.
His son made a sizable donation for the stadium project and wanted it named after his dad, who was a UW graduate. That's right. Martin Stadium is named for a Husky. Yes. Class of 1906.
Can't get a W's, guess. Okay.
Right.
Anyway, boy. Clarence Martin is a story for another day. Prior to 1959, though, Huskies held a 29-16 edge in the series with all six of the ties. So 627 winning percentage, pretty good. But beginning in 1959, that first Rose Bowl season that we've talked about with the Huskies, they have been 46-17. Over the Cougs for 73% of the games. So overall, the Huskies are sitting on 75 wins, the Cougars with 33, and those six ties. Saturday's the 115th meeting, and it is the 26th longest-running rivalry in Power 5 college football. I was expecting it to be a little higher up there. The Civil War has actually got us by about 10 games, amazingly. All right. I wanted to take a trip down memory lane and go through some of those memorable Apple Cups. So some of these will be great memories, others not so much. We're going to start with 1975, Don James' first season. Huskies entered the game 5-5, needed the win for a winning season. They were down by 13 late in the game. On 4th-and-1 from the UW 14-yard line, WSU coach Jim Sweeney, rather than kicking a field goal that would have clinched it, he opts to go for it and shove it down the Huskies' throat. Al Burleson gets the interception, takes it to the house. Then the Huskies get the ball back, and Warren Moon finds Spider Gaines for the long touchdown with just over a minute left. The Huskies pulled it out. Coach Sweeney resigned in disgrace after the game.
Oh, dear.
And I found this when I looked up the in Wikipedia, the article for Cooging It. This game was the first one mentioned in the list, even though the term didn't technically take off until the early 80s. So just for thought. All right, 1981. This is how I love hearing Cougar fans say, this is how it should be. Both teams needing a win to go to the Rose Bowl. Well, this was one of the only times this actually happened. 1981, both teams came into the game needing a win to go to the Rose Bowl. WCU had beaten UCLA earlier in the season. They just needed to win the Apple Cup. They would have clinched. They would have won the tiebreaker with the Bruins and gone to the first Rose Bowl in 51 years. Washington needed to win and also needed USC to win the victory bell down south. The game in LA kicked off 45 minutes prior to the Apple Cup, and the crowd erupted in the second half when UCLA missed their last-second field goal. The Trojans won at 22-21. Meanwhile, just before halftime in Husky Stadium, Steve Pelure threw one up for grabs in the end zone. Paul Scansey made what is even considered today one of the best catches in the history of Husky Stadium, diving through the end zone to grab it and give the Huskies a 10-7 lead. All players after the game said that was the catch and the play that changed the game.
Ooh, we're lucky it wasn't this year's USC team we needed.
Yeah, it was not. Yeah, fortunately, it was not this year's USC team. All right, 1982, very next year. The return to Pullman after 30 years in Spokane. The Cougars knocked the Huskies out of the Rose Bowl, 24-20, winning behind Keith Millard and their famous defense. The Cougs won 3 out of the next 4 Apple Cups, right in the heart of the Don James era. All right, fast forward, 1992. The Snow Bowl. The Huskies had just had the nation's longest winning streak of 22 games snapped by Arizona 2 weeks prior. They rallied to beat Oregon State the next week and clinched the spot in the Rose Bowl. So they went to the Apple Cup not needing to win. But the Cougars had just lost to Stanford, which knocked them out of the race for the Rose Bowl. They ended up finishing 9-3 that season. So that was a good Cougar team. If they had won against Stanford, it would have been 1981 all over again. But we know what happened. The snow came down something fierce. Drew Bledsoe leading the Cougars to a 42-23 win. 3 touchdowns from Shambay Wright Fair, and the Cougs take it. All right, let's go to 1997. I promise we'll get over these Cougar highlights pretty soon. But 1997, the Cougars clinching the Rose Bowl in Husky Stadium. Ryan Leaf throwing for 358 yards. Both teams in this game entered in the top 16 in the AP poll, but Leaf gets the win, sends Wazoo to their first Rose Bowl in 67 years, and this was ranked in the Cougar fan poll as the biggest win and the best win in Washington State football history.
Okay.
I'm just going to leave that for food for thought right there. All right, 2002, 5 years later, Cougars entered the game 9-1, ranked 3rd in the country. Legitimately in position to play for the national title, guys. They were trailing Ohio State, who had beaten the Cougs that season, and Miami on the day of the game. Ohio State, Michigan kicked off earlier. The Buckeyes won, but the Huskies were going for the winning season after ending November at 4-6. The game goes to overtime, and the backward pass recovered by Kai Ellis. And the Huskies clinch it in overtime and win the Northwest Championship. All right, the very next year, who could forget this classic between Bill Doba and Keith Gilbertson? But the Cougs entered the game 9-2, ranked 8th in the country, and the Huskies won it with a late touchdown to Corey Williams to keep their streak of 27 consecutive non-losing seasons alive. The Cougars would get their 10th win over Texas in the Holiday Bowl. All right, 2008, I'll make this quick, the Crapple Cup. Obviously, both teams entered here. Mm-hmm. Cougars were 1-10, but 0-8 in conference. Huskies were 0-11. They dropped it in overtime, and the 0-12, we never hear the end of it. All right, 2016, this is kind of the recent years. We've had a couple of really good ones, right? 2016, both teams were 7-1 in the Pac-12 North. Washington was vying for its first appearance in the college football playoff. The Huskies picked off Luke Falk 3 times, including his final 2 passes of the game, won it going away 45-17 in Pullman. Then 2 years later, the very next game in Pullman, the Snow Bowl 2, another one, winner-take-all in the Pac-12 North. Sweet revenge for the Huskies. They were led by Miles Gaskin, who ran for 170 yards and 3 touchdowns, including the long 80-yarder in the fourth quarter to ice it, shall we
say? Ice it, yeah. But sure, I'll take it.
So there's your trip down memory lane, some memorable Apple Cups. It's probably this year's edition may not get on this list, but hopefully there are still a lot of good memories to be made. Obviously, the announcement this week that they're going to extend it for 5 more years, the length of the Big Ten contract. They're going to play it usually the even-numbered years in Pullman since 1982. Or on the east side since the World War II, basically. We've been playing on the east side in even-numbered years, so we're switching it to Lumen Field next year. And then they're going to start alternating again to match the Huskies' kind of needs on the Big Ten schedule. I'm glad they found a way to make it work, and I think we're all excited to keep it going.
I love the history, and I'll go through some of my favorite Cougs, but I will take the other side of that Lincoln debate. I'm not a fan of this Apple Cup extension myself. I think we gave away the farm. This is, to me, has Anne-Marie Cause written all over it. I think our new athletic director came in with the right idea, which was our goal as a football program should be putting ourselves in position for the CFP playoff and make money. Why are we going to Pullman? Why are we doing this?
So counterpoint, and I saw somebody on Twitter come out and say, we would have never signed a deal like we just did with them for the next 5 years with a single other team in 130 teams in Division I football, right? I mean, this is a one-time exception thing. But that's the thing. This rivalry is a one-time, is a one-of-a-kind, unique thing. And also, I think it's fair to say, the Cougs are not going to be as formidable of an opponent, going forward in the Pac-2 with the Mountain West in tow than they have been for us, especially in the 80s and 2000s when they were kind of our nemesis. Mm-hmm. So I agree. This is kind of an institutional decision. It's not really one that's made because you're going to drop one in Pullman. But I think those are the years when you're going to be 4-8 and 5-7 anyway, and probably not years where you're looking at a CFP berth. But
if you're saying this is your argument, is this is going to be our B, right? Of our A, B, and our C matchup. And this is going to be our B because they're going to be in the Mountain West. Why are we traveling to our B? And if this starts putting other great from the fan talking, if this starts putting the Tennessee road trip at risk, this starts becoming, where you look at like the Georgias and stuff of the world where you just don't have, you've got Georgia Tech every year. You've got this on your schedule, Florida State. And this is not what this is going to be. So now that's going to be our version of this with a Mountain West team that starts putting at risk all these other great home and home things that we could have. I just feel like I felt like when I heard the press conference with our new athletic director say, look, these are two prioritized things. And Anne-Marie Cousy said, well, hey, he's new here. Let me give him a little talking to that. Anne-Marie Cousy, his boss, gave him a little talking to and said, I got my buddy over there who's the other president. I know history here. This is more than money and more than getting into the CFP.
You're already hanging the death of the conference on me. You're not going to hang the death of the Apple Cup on me is what you're
saying. Right. Yeah. That's right. That's right.
Totally. Yeah. So, BT, I can't believe you're throwing shade on our school president after her great moves on the sideline at USC after we were securing that victory. She was getting her groove on. She was looking great out there.
The mascot, okay? If you haven't seen it, don't. And if you did see it, try to forget it.
So, BT, the best part of this argument is everything that you said is totally and completely logical. I love how there's this faction of Cougs out there that are like, it's a terrible deal. We should pass up on this. We don't want anything to do with the Huskies anymore. They're almost trying to Coug themselves out of the Apple Cup.
And where do they think they're recruiting? How do they not this is the biggest thing for them from recruiting of having a Seattle-based presence. And playing in Seattle at least every year at Husky Stadium and showing the recruits. Yeah, this is my gosh.
BT. This is a jilted ex, BT. Very upset about this.
If they are truly complaining and they're not just in their still emotional, argumentative state, which maybe they all still are, but if they're truly complaining about this, they've nothing to complain about. Because that's right. We didn't have to do this.
We didn't, but
it's a jilted ex. We're showing up at our ex-in-laws for the next 3 years on odd years.
Bringing stuffing to Thanksgiving dinner anyway, even though it's been broke up 3 years ago. I love it. Hey, let me go through this. I will say, can I just super quick list here of some of my favorite Cougs. Drew Bledsoe. It always just freaking impressed me, like what he did, what it is as a pro. And like anytime you hear an interview from him, it's one of those guys that I thought was a complete stud. One of our biggest misses, I think, in recruiting history, we should have got out of Burien. Mike Utley in the 80s. Holy smokes, I would have loved to seen him in Husky Purple. Another one, now this might be controversial, but I think Ryan Leaf to me, where, you know, I think he had such a freaking attitude, and, you know, the horror stories from him playing in like the old, the Spokane 3-on-3 basketball tournaments and stuff of, you know, look, he was a guy who was troubled, but I think him showing like that you can become, be an addict and come back, and really what he's done to and really stay clean is just freaking incredible. And it's a great example, and love what he's done.
Oh, come on, BT. You're missing the mustache. Gardner Minshew. Oh my gosh. I mean, the style points and the fact that before every NFL game, he sends out this like Twitter video of him talking to himself in the mirror and pumping himself up. Fantastic. I mean, the story though, like he was out of football, right? Like he was going to stop playing and Leach was like, okay, give it one more shot up here. And what he did that first game day when they beat Oregon, right? How electric was that? And I just loved all of the mustachios running around all the time. He's a great kook.
One more. Linebacker Scott Pelure in the late 70s. Standout coach from the East Side. He coached my son at Cougar Mountain Middle School just past this last year. And if you kind of grew up around this area, Issaquah, et cetera, he probably coached one of your kids in Harris Sports and just only got to know him a little bit, but great, great guy and Cougar legend and loved Wazoo. And last guy, one of my favorite movies of all time. One of the best documentaries ever. Gleason, Steve Gleason. Oh, absolutely. A freaking legend. Of a Coug and a human, just a great guy, but one of my faves.
Yeah, good ones.
Yep, absolutely.
I'll throw another one out there. This is the top one. How about my Aunt Chris?
Yeah.
It was like a sister to me growing up, and a young podcast host, BT, in the late 80s, got a B- in algebra, and mom had a great idea to show him, you know, go out and set you straight. We're going to send you out to spend a weekend with Aunt Chris out at Wazoo and see what college is all about. And 30 minutes into my time at the Kappa Kappa Gamma house at Washington State in the late 80s, realized I really need to buckle down because this college thing looks freaking awesome. That was the peak of my K-12 experience that weekend. And God bless Wazoo, who had no problems whatsoever having an eighth grader join his aunt at across Greek Row at a myriad of events. God bless Washington State University.
Turned you into the man that you are today, BT.
That's it. Never look back. All right. So, hey, let's talk about this game, though. I mean, a lot of history coming up, but this is a big one. And this was one of those ones that is like, of course, they've got everything. You know, we have everything to play for. They've got nothing to lose. But, you know, they've got a bowl game to come for. And there's nothing more than these guys would like than to knock us off of our pedestal. The StubHub tickets, I mean, the get-in price is about $220, and that's for a crap seat. And it goes up from there. This thing is going to have a lot of crimson and gray. All the Seattle alums are going to be there, but let's talk a little bit about this. These guys were number 13 in the AP after beating Wisconsin and Oregon State. And just wow. And one win since. Let's talk about this offense though, coming up against our defense, who we've talked about has some injury. We've got some injuries coming up under offensive coordinator Ben Arbuckle. Four of the five top passing leaders in college football from the Pac. Amazing. And number five right there, it's Cam Ward from Incarnate Word. 3,419 yards, a true dual threat quarterback. He's so good at buying time in the pocket without pulling it. If you look how he does it too, doesn't pull his eyes from downfield. He can roll out, throw across his body, throws off platform, changes angles to avoid rushers, some sidearm as he needs it. Those mechanics, they can look sloppy sometimes, but he gets it done. He's passed into a trio of wide receivers, Lincoln Victor, 5'9", Kyle Williams, and Josh Kelly, the two 6-footers. Each of these guys averaging about 70 to 80 yards a game. He does give up a ton of sacks, 34 on the season. Typically, in my opinion, he doesn't hit that underneath route when he should, holds onto the ball a little bit too long. And defenses that can confuse him in coverage, that's where you get a lot of the sacks. Sacks that he doesn't see coming. Dial up some of those drop people that drop back, disguising things as needed. And I think let's get Morrell, let's get the team in there, putting this thing together. That's where he struggles a bit. 42 passes a game versus 26 runs a game. This is the air raid. Might not be Leach's air raid, but it's an air raid. They average just 86 rushing yards a game. Nakia Watson, the leader, but shit, Nakia Watson had 6 yards and 1 yard total in losses to Cal and Stanford, and just 47 in salt time against CU. From time to time, they're going to bring in John Mateer, the freshman quarterback. And you know, when he do that, they're running. It's an RPO play. That's what they do if he's in. And then Darren, you stop it, right? That's just what they do. This team, I think, is one in which is going to test our secondary. It's going to test Braylon Trice and the rest of the edge rushers that we're bringing in enough to get pressure. He can run on you. So who's the spy? Who's the linebacker? Who's staying home and making sure that he doesn't run when he has to? And can the secondary do what they need to do without racking up a bunch of unnecessary penalties against an offense that, look, can give you fits on a dry day in Seattle?
Yeah, we've had so much success getting to the quarterback when we played them in those big games, particularly ones I mentioned in the Peterson years, right? We would just drop eight and three-man rush it and get plenty of sacks. And that's the type of thing that in this game, if we're able to do, it's going to be a nice day on Motlake.
Guys, let's just be honest on what this game means for Cam Ward. This is his tryout to be a Husky next year in the trial.
Wow. You know, Grubb today was absolutely singing his praises. And it's like, shouldn't you be talking about the Cougar defense?
Oh, it's wild. Yeah. I mean, look, they talked about it. The cupboards are going to get absolutely pilfered next year in the lack of a conference and the lack of NIL, et cetera. But hey, that's what we expect to see out of this offense. And I think the defense is just really going to have to step up and do what they need to do. But let's call it what it is. They've got a high powered offense, high powered passing game, but we're going to have to shut down. How about this defense? Talk to me about this Wazoo defense.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if you look back at the last few games, they held Stanford to 10 points. Unfortunately, that was a loss for them, which was not great. Yes. Cal kind of went off on them a little bit, right? Martinez has kind of hit his stride down there in Berkeley. They gave up 42 points. But really, the strength of the defense is on their defensive line, right? They have two really good edges, Ron Stone Jr. and Brennan Jackson. Stone Jr. in particular was really strong in that Colorado game. They knocked Shadur out of that game. Now, granted, Colorado's offensive line is very similar to the turnstiles at Husky Stadium, where you literally do not need a ticket to get into the game. You could just come right through.
Do something about that.
Very similar approach, it seemed like, in the Colorado game. But I mean, they had harassed Shadur and they knocked him out of the game, right? Mm-hmm. Stone Jr. had 9 total tackles, 4 solo, 2 sacks, 3 Jeez. Tackles for loss. He was hugely disruptive. Now, granted, you could say the same thing about Oregon State's defensive line, right? Mm-hmm. Before coming into this last game. Right, exactly. And look what our tackles did, right? No. So, you know, I mean, let's put that in context here, guys. And so I'm not particularly worried about this defense, and especially my hope is Grubb lights up the fire underneath our offense after this last performance. I really think it's just all about, you know, our offense playing up to its potential. I think our offensive line has proven that they can stand up against really athletic defensive lines, like they did against Oregon for the most part. Here's what I'm the most worried about, you guys. Honestly, I'll just be straight up about this. I don't want any cheap shots on Penix. I don't want anybody coming in late, hitting them low, any of that kind of garbage. Like, that's kind of what I'm going to be watching out for in this one.
O-line, keep them healthy. Keep them keep them safe. I'm with you on that.
I mean, this O-line has been elite all season, except for maybe that one game against Arizona State, and they definitely have had some struggles in the interior. But, I mean, Oregon State and Utah before that, two of the best pass rushing teams in the conference, and completely neutralized them. So, and we thought Penix, you know, might have been nursing an injury or something like that. It turns out maybe, you know, just had the flu, because when he's been back there, he's been protected and he's been able to get the job done. So I agree. If the Cougs are able to replicate what they did against Sanders in Colorado, where we're in for a long day, but I am taking the dogs on that side of the bet, Mitch.
I'm with you on that as well. And look how much of course, the final score, I think, was CU. It came out on Friday night, and watched that and go, wow. Okay, shoot, are we getting even speaking? But when Shadur Sanders came out in the first quarter, not only such a massive drop off between them and their other quarterbacks, but how much of that team is all in on Sanders, just last name in general, and Shadur going out of them, just packing it in. And Prime was not pleased with the performance after that.
No, I mean, they, to your point, BT, they packed that. They packed it in. You could see the energy. It was terrible. Like, Primetime looked like he was going to barf on the sidelines. He was like just looking there with like a dry open mouth. Like, I'm literally going to throw up right now.
Just get me out of here.
Where am I? I don't
want to be here anymore.
I'm on Mars.
Yeah. And so like, how much of that can we take from it? But this is going to be huge when they got an extra day of rest, whatever that works. But, so, you know, this one's a big favorite. This is a big line as well. And I don't know how you guys think about this, but do you think, is this just a UW win or is this a UW cover?
I think UW covers. Honestly, I think I think Grubb is really challenging this offense to say, look, guys, yeah, actually, you know what? I think Grubb is playing a little part of it. I think it's the guys in the locker room. I think Penix and those guys are pissed off right now that they're not playing up to their potential, and they know it, which gets me the most excited about this team.
You think they're going to feel good if they can't get their seniors out there on senior day in the fourth quarter?
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, no, I think this is like we're getting to a point in the season when the style points are, you know, you're only getting one chance to make a last impression here, so to speak. And I think that they're going to come out firing. In the past, even against good Cougar teams, you know, this is an 11-0 Husky team. It's 11-0 for the first time since they won the 91 Apple Cup. And I just don't think they're going to let us down. I think they're going to win big in this one. And I'm taking the Dogs, laying the points.
Love it. All right. We're all on the same team there. And one more question before you guys, before we get into the Pac-12 roundup. It's Monday. DFP comes out tomorrow. We saw what happened with Florida State, you know, and I mean, it's a shame what happened. That's quarterback going down terrible. For the year, but hey, they should have been four last week or the week before. Does the CFP, are they cowards or are they going to do what it takes and put the Dogs up in that four spot? What do you say? Like, the AP's done. Coaches had them at fifth. AP had them at four. What's the CFP do?
Yeah, I mean, who knows what they freaking do? I mean, they're all, you know, the only one west of the Great Plains is the Nevada athletic director, right? So they clearly, the East Coast bias doesn't really begin to cover it. I will say, with five undefeated teams and two of them are facing off also on Saturday, there's room for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. You need to win the next two. You need to win these next two, more importantly than anything else. But this team doesn't deserve to be fourth and Florida State to be third if they were to bump the loser of Ohio State, Michigan out. So I think this team deserves to be in the top three. And I think you have to, at this point, you cannot ignore the resume any longer. I mean, Florida State beat a 6-4, Clemson team? Did they win last weekend? Maybe they're 7-4. And they did not face Louisville. They didn't face, NC State or North Carolina this year. North Carolina is a Heisman candidate quarterback. So they have not played anyone in the ACC of note. They have the one win over LSU, which has looked a little bit worse as the season has worn on. It's still a good, it's still a nice win. But I think that you, by your own ranking, CFP, we have the best win over the highest ranked team, and we have the most wins out of the top 25 by your rankings. So I don't know how you can ignore that and keep them out of the top four spots. I think that's the excuse maybe they were looking for, or whatever it is they're looking for, to move us at least in the top four. But I believe personally we should be in the top three.
I think we'll probably end up four is what I'm predicting here. And that's okay. What I want though, guys, is I want us to be fifth. I want that locker room to put five up on the board, on the corkboard, put it up there. And, you know, actually, you know, like, all joking aside, like, doesn't this kind of validate the move to the Big Ten? Like, honestly, like, look at all of these, like, what coming in do? After the non-conference games, like, look at all the press of like, oh, the Pac-10's legit or Pac-12's legit this year and all that kind of stuff. And you're still putting us at five with the, you know, and like, come on, what a joke. Like, no, at least we're going to move past this, right?
Well, hopefully. I mean, if we were 11-0 in the Big Ten,
yeah,
we'd be number three, because there are two teams that are 11-0 in the Big Ten, and they're ranked 2 and 3. I do think the brand, you know, value is kind of, it matters. That's why Oregon is sixth or whatever. And I mean, shockingly, they're even ahead of Alabama and Texas, which that's a whole nother thing. But Alabama, you look at their resume and who have they played, right? Texas in this Big 12 with a loss to Oklahoma and a win over Alabama, but not much else. So that both of those resumes are lacking a little meat. Maybe Oregon's is as well. But in any case, the brand thing has always kind of mattered in these things. It's subjective. And the fact the Huskies have not been able to put anyone away since September, basically. And I think that's weighing on their minds.
Yeah. Well, hey, this week you got a chance to do it and win with some style points and watch some of the other things take care of themselves. And again, like we talked about earlier after the win against Oregon, where everyone said, hey, see you in Vegas. And we said, well, maybe. And maybe is right. You know, and they still have some work to do this week. But let's get into this a little bit. Should we talk about the rest of things that happened last week? We saw it. Wow. So it was a heck of a couple of games. We already talked about this Friday night, that 4-6 CU at 4-6 Wazoo. Wazoo with a 4.5-point favorite, not even close. Wazoo 45-16. Shedeur Sanders knocked out of this game. Buffs will miss the bowl season again for a third straight year. They did win. They did cover on their 3.5 win over under season. But from what they were of I think it was a number 14 ranked team to come down here. Wow. Saturday, we called it a heavyweight matchup. One team did their part, the other team didn't. Two teams with Pac-12 championship hopes alive at the time. It was 7-3 Utah and 7-3 Arizona. Wildcats, the 1-point favorite, they would roll 42-18, kicked off by a 21-0 first quarter. Fafita, 253 yards and a pair of TDs before getting Jaden Delora back in for a couple of reps. Wow. Zona looking really good. Battle for LA in the Coliseum. Wow. Trojans were a 7-point touchdown favorite. Again, not even close. 38-20 Bruins. Ethan Garbers, the former Husky, 3 touchdown passes. Bruins, a real stifling defense. But boy, I mean, just tough year for USC Nation. Oregon at 3-7 ASU. The Ducks, the 23.5-point favorite in Tempe. This was over at halftime. 49-13 Ducks. Bo Nix took the second half off. Last one, big game, 4-6 Cal, 3-7 Stanford. The Cal, the 6.5-point favorite. They would win. They would cover 27-15. A nice win by Cal to get that fifth win. Status this week. So let's talk about it. Before we get into this week's picks, Law Dog, this is it for us. We've been betting each other all season for a massive, massive prize. Lots of commas after this, a lot of dollar figures. Where are we today? Who's ahead? Who's ahead in the Pac-12?
We got a championship game picks next week, BT, and we're also going to have a few bowl games in there. So I don't know how
we're picking bowl games. Didn't realize that. Okay.
So So just before you get carried away, you do lead the pack with 35. You actually had an okay week here. I tried to differ from you on a couple of those, and I went 0-2, including Utah and the men of Stanford let me down. So I'm trailing you by 3 with 1 week to go. Mitch is 6 back and would probably need to is going to need to start making up some ground to get serious about this right now.
BT, I'm offended you didn't even include me in this conversation when you started that bit.
do I really need to statistically? It's good you're still getting your picks in, though. Also, hey, how about this? Going for the last ever. We've been doing this thing longer than anybody. Pac-12 Fantasy Championship, and yours truly, this podcast host, is in it. I need a big, big game out of Pennix, because I will say that the rest of my lineup leaves a little bit to be desired, but I need a big game out of Pennix to get this the final, the ultimate Pac-12 Fantasy Championship. Here we go this week. Let's make some picks, and we're going to go round robin here, okay? So we're going to start. Everybody's going to have to start each one. This week, the Civil War, 5:30 on Fox Friday night. Number 11, 8-3 Oregon State, and number 6, 10-1 Oregon. The Ducks, the 13.5-point favorite. The Beavs, winner of 2 of the last 3, but have not won in Eugene since 2007. I'll make the first pick on this one. I hate to say it, I cannot tell you how much I want the Beavers to win this and want to have a great time and enjoying some cold beers with the faithful of Arizona down in Las Vegas, but I just don't see it happen. And I think this is one in which Eugene wins in Eugene. The Ducks win comfortably by about 17, maybe more. Give me the Ducks to win and the Ducks to cover.
I have to zig a little bit here, right? I'll take the Beavers. I think they have a very balanced running game. I don't think they win this game, but I think 13 might be a little bit heavy. If they can control the ball, control the clock, maybe DJU's got a ball out. He can't have turnovers. like he's
had. Big game for him.
Big game. So I'll take the Beavers.
Yeah, and the Ducks did win, or were leading, I should say, by what? Three touchdowns last
three
year?
Three touchdowns, amazing.
And the Beavers stormed back and won it. That was at home. So I don't think you are wrong in your sense of the game, BT. I'm going to take the Beavs here. Not only the emotional pick, but 13.5 in a rivalry game. They're just as pissed off at the Ducks as Wazoo is at us. They're going to get everything Jonathan Smith has in this one. So 13.5, I'll at least take the points and cross my fingers for a Beaver win.
Would love to see that. Give me that money line too. It'd be just incredible. Saturday at noon. How about this on Pac-12 networks? 4-7 CU at 7-4 Utah and Salt Lake City. The rivalry that they tried to get off the ground and never really got going. The Utes a 21.5 point favorite at home.
Give me Utah all day. The Buffs are dead in the waters, guys. Deion's eyes have death in them. They should put coins on his face during the game.
Yeah, I mean, Colorado's really been letting me down here at the end of the year. I was able to sneak through a few of those, but last week they definitely let me down big time. They got annihilated by Wazoo. 21.5, I think Utah is also flailing a little bit. They are so banged up. I'm just going to take the points and hold on for dear life here.
This one's going to be a tough one. Wow. These are two teams going completely in the wrong direction, both ways. And I have no idea how to pick this one. This, to me, is a complete coin flip. Utah's an absolute mess for what they were or what should have been this year. And CU without Shador doesn't play. I mean, I have no idea. But, you know, all things considered, give me Colorado. Too much on that line. Too big to cover. I think Utah wins, but I don't think they win by 28. Here we go. Lawdog, you got to pick this one first. 12:30 on ESPN. It's the 97th Territorial Cup. Number 17, 8-3 Arizona at 3-8 ASU, but it's in Tempe. Wildcats won last year 38-35. But before that, ASU had won 8 of the last 10, including, remember that 70-7 drubbing at the end of the Kevin Sumlin era? This one, lifetime Wildcats have the advantage with the 50-41-1 advantage, but largely helped by a 19-1 record that everybody remembers between the years of 1903 and 1948, when this was a big Arizona.
The border
set of wins. The border. Yeah, that's right. So this year, Zona, an 11-point favorite. How say you, Law Dog?
Yeah, you know, Arizona has been a team that I have not picked very well this season because I haven't picked them enough. And I'm going to lay the points here. As much as the fighting Kenny Dillingham's are getting all the headlines, Jed Fish is just marching from one end of victory lane to the other. And I mean, they're playing for a Pac-12 championship. Give me the Cats.
Ooh. I'm going to be fast. I'll just join you on that. I can't go the other way on this. I was so shocked it was 11. ASU, I think they've ran out of tricks at this point. And there's nothing left. Zona, I think, by a lot.
Yeah, I agree. I'd love to go against both of you, but I can't. Like, the wind's out of the sails. The reality is set in for ASU. No bowl game. Kenny Dillingham, thank you for showing up and participating. Here's your ribbon. Wildcats cover.
Oh. Okay, we're all in the same one on this one. Shoot, we should just drop some real cash on this. Next one, 4 p.m. on Pac-12 Network. I don't know if they can't be right, or is that shown also on NBC? It's number 19, 8-3 Notre Dame at 3-8 Stanford. Stanford, the 26-point dog, Irish. This is pretty crazy. 21-14 lifetime record, but remember the Cardinal upset the Irish in South Bend last year, 16-14. This year's team, the Irish, it's pretty interesting. I mean, they've got a couple losses, Clemson, Louisville, and Ohio State, right? Not too bad. This year's Stanford team brings losses to way more teams than that. How say you, guys? I think this one goes back to Mitch. Can Stanford cover 26?
I kind of like Stanford on this, man. I like Troy Taylor. Like, I mean, the jury's kind of out, but I think he's a good coach. They've kind of shown up at times when it was surprising. I'm going to take the Cardinal on this.
Yeah, give me the Cardinal. I love that this Notre Dame is going to be the last football game ever shown on the Pac-12 network. I just think that is like, I saw somebody write this on Twitter. It is a hilarious parting shot by the Pac-12 network, and I kind of think it is. And I'm taking the men of Stanford who, you know, just our 26 is a lot, and I don't think Notre Dame is, you know, is excited about playing on the Pac-12 network on the West Coast. So
I'd love to see it. And what I hope is that right before sometime, let's call it Thursday, Friday, they just start throwing all the equipment out on Facebook Marketplace and just show up with like high eight cameras and like just make it the worst broadcast ever. Absolutely the worst broadcast ever.
Guys, it's going to be great. The city of Chicago is going to go absolutely apeshit, where everyone's going to be like, wait a minute, you have DirecTV, right? Isn't the game on tonight? It's going to be a meltdown.
Just every bar rioting in Chicago, and they have finally figured out the day of that, like, they have no ability to even procure the network. It's going to be incredible.
Make your pick, BT.
Okay, my pick. I hate to say this, guys. I'm sorry. This one has to be Stanford as well. That is just way too many. I mean, 26. Come on. You know. But let's have them show a little bit of pride here. I don't think this Irish team is even that good. Here we go. Last one. This is the big dog. Here we go. California at UCLA. 5-6 Cal at 7-4 UCLA. UCLA the 9-point favorite. I'll go first on this one. This one, I like, I love what Cal's done, and I know they need this win to get bowl eligible officially, but UCLA, they're really showing me what I thought they could have been. I think they should have probably started Ethan Garbers the whole part of the year. New receivers who are scoring, who like new weapons that they probably could have used 4 or 5 games ago. The defense is really stepping up. It burns me to see Laiatu Latu. Oh, I would have loved to see him as just a little bit of depth on our side, but give me UCLA to win and win by about two touchdowns on this.
I'll take the goal.
I'll go Cal. Yeah, me too. I'm with you, Law Dog. Well, A, we got to have some ground to make up here. And I'll do a homage to Gumby Bear here and just say the Chipster is going to, you know, he was fighting for his job last week, guys. He had a presser out. He's like, yeah, I'm on the hot seat. And now he's going to let it down. He's going to have too many tacos the night before.
He's fighting for his job this week, because if he beats USC and then loses to Cal, it's probably curtains, right? But I also think, you know, it's a little bit – this has got a little bit of those vibes too, that like you're leaving me behind vibes. And Cal, I feel like they're going to tap into that. I'm all in.
Ugh. Okay. Hey, I like this one, man. I'm sticking with mine. I think UCLA is hitting on all cylinders right now. But hey, you got it. That's the Pac-12 wrap up. Big game this week. What an Apple Cup that we have to hit. Any parting words there for little brother Wazoo?
Well, it's great. It's great that they extended the series. Yeah. See you next year at Lumen. It's just going to be one of those headlocks, and I think noogie time. And we'll find out what happens. I think they're going to come to play.
I think the Cougs are, this is going to be the last real Apple Cup, right? As we've always known it. I mean, I think you look around and see Colorado and Colorado State, or, you know, there's other examples of those rivalries that have kind of lost their luster over the years. I think this one probably stands a chance of that happening as well. So I'm looking forward to it in Husky Stadium. No planting the flag this time, Cougs.
Oh, we still owe you for that.
12-0.
This is it. And boy, we will stay with each other and show up early for those seniors. I think 12 seniors are going to be coming out and hearing it from us. So let's get in your seats early, Husky Nation, and get this win. Get to 12-0. And next week on the Dog Pod, we're going to be talking about, who knows, maybe Arizona, maybe somebody else down in out in Vegas. Let's go, Dogs.
Go, Dogs.
Oof. Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Washington State University.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Oregon and Stanford.
Nope. Touchdown, Washington.
Yep. Los perros esquimales están arriba. Y hoy, los patos de Oregón bow down to Washington.